BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
You might have heard about the fog of war. It was enveloping Kyiv in March 2022, in the days after the Russian invasion, as I was starting to think about this series.
End of the day now, and we saw where civilians were trying to get out of the town of Irpin.
Irpin was one of the commuter towns north and west of Kyiv, where Ukrainians were fighting to stop the Russian advance.
Saw the shelling that was coming in. It was pretty heavy.
Tens of thousands of civilians were escaping. Getting through unscathed was a lottery.
There's been some incoming fire.
We had a narrow escape.
It's kind of alarming. Keep going.
Maybe an hour later, two adults and two small children were killed on the same stretch of road. Video of their dead bodies was all over social media.
You know, you could see the poor little children's winter coats for the journey so they wouldn't be cold, and they had little backpacks.
Some of the program editors back in London get nervous about showing death. They say caution respects the sensibilities of the viewers. In the field, often still angry or disgusted about what I've seen, I've accused them at times of sanitising the news.
At the moment, the programme hasn't gone out yet. We have sent over our version. Their plan is to blob the faces, in other words, put a little graphic cloud over them. And their argument for that is that what if their friends who hadn't realised they were dead saw them? They think it's some kind of respect. But the pictures and the video are all over the internet. Second of all, I think that blobbing people's identities, I think it is dehumanizing. I've made those points. I've been making these points for all my career, practically. I don't think it's an argument at the moment I'm going to win, but, you know, it is important to see the truth.
I've been accused, in other wars, of hiding the truth by not showing every detail of the way bombs and bullets rip bodies apart. The counter-argument is that too much horror can make audiences look away. But it's more complicated than that because of the speed stories can move these days, exploding across social media faster than news organizations can put together reasoned reports. Truth requires detail, but how much is enough? In this episode, should details that horrify or spread hatred be suppressed? I'm Jeremy Bowen. This is Frontlines of Journalism, Episode 8, Details.
One of the hardest things is assessing how much of the crazy is crazy and how much of it is actually going to become real.
Emily Bell is a professor at the Columbia University Journalism School. She's on the board of the Guardian Media Group.
It's one of the real battles we had when we were looking at the whole Trump story.
The QAnon movement appears to be
gaining a lot of followers. Do you ignore this because it's patently crazy?
I understand they like me very much.
Or do you cover it and give it amplification?
I've heard these are people that love our country.
Because at some point it's going to have a really significant impact on real life.
The Confederate flag is being flown outside the Senate chamber.
We will never give up. We will never concede. We will not take it anymore.
Yes, because I suppose the worry is that you give ammunition to someone who's going to use it badly and wrongly.
That's right. We're active ingredients in something which is often beyond our own understanding. We may not know how our words are going to be used or the material that we gather, how that is going to be weaponized. It's no longer okay, I think, to say report and be damned. That's not a sustainable position.
Sometimes journalists have to grapple with the fact that they know, often very early on, that their reporting might be manipulated by others.
I did a very short story for The Times, acutely conscious that, A, I thought, this sounds so horrific, I can't believe it's true, and B, this is a dream story for the far right. And so it proved.
One day around 2005 or 2006, he can't remember which exactly, Andrew Norfolk, an investigative reporter with The Times, saw in his inbox a press release about two mothers in Rotherham, frantic with worry, whose young daughters had been drawn into a web of drink, drugs and sexual exploitation.
The difficult fact was that all of these young men who were then passing these girls on to older men were from the town's Pakistani community. as a result of the publicity, not in the Times, that generated, Nick Griffin stood for the BNP in the next general election. They did indeed turn it into a massive issue with their own poisonous and twisted agenda.
Social workers and the police were nervous about inflaming racial tensions.
If I'm honest, that acted as a brake on me for a number of years.
But then Andrew heard something he couldn't ignore. In the summer of 2010, he was heading home to Leeds.
I had BBC Five Live on in the car, and there was a report.
Chester police have been praising a 14-year-old girl who helped them trace nine men.
As the listener in my car, I heard that nine men had just been convicted of a series of horrific sexual offences against one 14-year-old girl.
Actually linked with each other. They, you know, it's organised criminal activity.
The next morning I checked and there were nine Muslim names.
Andrew started investigating child sexual exploitation cases dating back to 1997.
We found 56 men had been convicted from 13 different towns and cities across the North and the Midlands. Of the 56 men who'd been convicted, 53 of them were Asian men, three were white, and the vast majority of those men were members of the Pakistani community.
Andrew published his reports. He tells me how he was, still is, aware that most sexual offenders in the UK are white men. Later, an official inquiry found institutional failures from the police. One was not grasping the problem for fear of being accused of racism.
There were people who still to this day who insist this is Islamophobic, racist reporting.
It was really inflammatory.
Aisha Gill is Professor of Criminology at the University of Bristol Centre for Gender and Violence Research.
It was weaponised and stigmatised Muslim communities and specifically Pakistani men.
As others followed up the Times story, Aisha Gill didn't like what she was reading. Not just because the victims, she says, at first had been ignored or blamed, but because of the way that the ethnicity of the perpetrators was reported.
It surged far-right, Islamophobic, anti-immigrant discourses.
By the journalists or by unscrupulous right-wingers?
By both. The way in which it was reported, the sensationalism and stereotyping, it kind of created a moral panic. Ethnicity was linked with child sexual exploitation.
What were journalists meant to do in terms of reporting this?
It was the framing of it, which actually overlooked causal socioeconomic factors. It's not just a problem for Pakistani communities. When violence happens in other communities, in for example, white majority communities, culture is never referenced or problematized in the same way. There was a case, 2012, where eight men, seven of them white, who groomed 15 vulnerable girls between the age of 13 and 15. That story barely made a ripple in the national media. And I do think that there is a bias towards a crime model of white victims and Pakistani perpetrators.
Why was it important to mention that, I mean, bearing in mind that you said yourself that most sexual offenders are white, why was it important to mention the origins of these men who were convicted of these crimes?
Well, because if you have identified a pattern of offending and nobody is even acknowledging it exists, but you know it exists, then the prime motivator in identifying the ethnicity of the perpetrators was to say, this is happening. We need to understand why this is happening.
When you saw that massive splash in the Times, what did you think?
The reaction initially was one of shock, I guess.
Andrew Mosley had just started as editor of the local paper, the Rotherham Advertiser, when the Times broke the story.
I think we just genuinely weren't aware of the wide-scale nature of it.
Do you think that the fact that race was part of it made it more difficult to report?
Yeah, I definitely do.
Andrew Mosley was acutely aware that following up the Times report was going to stir up some strong feelings.
I think we did about five full pages, of which one of the messages in there was, look, keep calm, because we'd had rumblings that the EDL were coming, Britain First, which they did 17 times in 5 years. They marched around Rotherham.
Why flag!
Our flag!
Whose flag?
Our flag!
It fueled further Muslim tensions and hatred. Speaking to young Muslim men and women in those communities at the time, many felt really unsafe.
Over the last 2-3 years, with these EDL, BNP, whatever, coming every year, causing racism.
Andrew Norfolk stayed with the story for another 4 years. The fallout from his exposé went in all directions. Without doubt, it inflamed racial tensions in Rotherham. It also brought about real change.
Massively increased resources being put into training police.
A special panel of judges being created to handle such prosecutions.
The Crown Prosecution drew up a whole set of new set of guidelines. Never will I have the sense of fulfilment I got. It was never before, never again will I ever have any moment like that as a journalist. That sense of it actually made a difference and it actually did help. There wasn't much left of me by the end of it.
The story has had a lasting impact. In April 2023, the UK Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, was accused of dog-whistle politics when she went back to the grooming scandal, including in this interview with Sky News.
White English girls being pursued and raped and drugged by gangs of British Pakistani men.
Professor Aisha Gill.
I think it has had an impact in terms of community relations and trust in journalists.
Do you ever have doubts in what you were doing?
I think I came to think what I still think, which is what we've done, the British media, and I totally include myself in that for a number of years, was effectively by not addressing it, we left a vacuum. And into that vacuum, in poor white communities, in many different towns, the far right had marched with hobnail boots, seeming to be the only people who cared.
Deciding how much detail is enough means leaving things out, and what isn't shown can still be manipulated. I spoke about this with the founder of Bellingcat, Elliot Higgins, whose open-source investigations rely on often very graphic video and who, like me, thinks hard about how much detail is enough or too much.
I know that there's a feeling that if you don't put everything in, then you're covering up the truth. I'll give you an example. The 2006 war in Lebanon, there were some awful sights of Lebanese who'd been blown to bits by Israeli bombs. And we alluded to it and we showed things, but not the whole horrible butcher shop. I had Lebanese people saying to me, you're covering up the truth. You're on the other side. I said, we're on no one's side. They said, no, you're covering up the truth because you have to show everything.
Well, I think there is really horrific stuff that's shown on social media that would never make it into the news. So people see that on social media and then they see the news that are reporting it. Some people can perceive that as a cover-up. And I think there's very strong reasons for not showing that imagery. But I think often you kind of have to be able to communicate why you're not showing that kind of stuff. Also get across the severity of what you're not showing. And that's a very, very difficult balancing act.
Back in Ukraine in 2022, my report went out with blobs on the faces of the dead adults and children. Viewers still had a good idea of what had happened. I still felt holding back identity somehow failed the victims. The balancing act is always difficult. Frontlines of Journalism is presented by me, Jeremy Bowen. The producer is Georgia Catt. The assistant producer is Sam Peach. Additional research by Rob Byrne. Series mixing by Jackie Marjoram. The series editor is Philip Sellers. Please rate and leave a review to help others find us.